action.
Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. 2-for-1, no concern for the future, living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow line dance song.
Hey, Sign Guy Nation, welcome on another Friday afternoon. Sign Guy and QT with you like normal. Real fast before we jump into things, if you're looking at wrestling shows in the next couple of days, tonight, WCWO, like usual, at the Outlaw Arena in Indianapolis, Indiana. Freelance Wrestling in Chicago, Illinois. DSR PTR in Tioga, Georgia. RCW in Kalmar, Alberta. NEW in Waterbury, Connecticut. Brew City Wrestling in Waukesha, Wisconsin. And WFAC in Owosso, Oklahoma. Tomorrow night, New Era Wrestling in Shelbyville, Indiana. CPW with two shows tomorrow, where you can find me on both, in Marysville, Washington. WUW in Bremerton, Washington at Avalanitas. Northwest Pro in Vaughan, Washington. DCW in Marydale, Delaware. Supreme Wrestling in North Vernon, Indiana. All-Star Wrestling in Vancouver, B.C. Defy Wrestling in Portland, Oregon. AWF in Scottsdale, Arizona. APW in Daly City, California. MGP in Lebanon, Indiana. WWA in Paducah, Kentucky. DCW in Euless, Texas. LCW in Lewisburg, North Carolina. ECPW in Wadsworth, New York. So get out there, find yourself a show near you, and support some local professional wrestling. Without further ado, I want to bring our guests on. We have commentary today, and one of the great commentators in professional wrestling today has joined us. Commentary, of course, a vital part in professional wrestling. They are the voices of the promotion. They tell the fans everything they need to know about the shows, about the wrestlers, how to support it. And one of those gentlemen, David Adams, is with us now. David, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much. It's an honor to be here. I appreciate it.
Well, since it is commentary day, would you mind starting off telling us how it is that you came to be a commentator for professional wrestling?
Actually, yeah. I initially got into professional wrestling as a ring announcer, and for the first 6 months I was in the business, that's all I did was ring announcing. And then one night, one of the commentators called out sick, and the lead commentator was like, "Hey, do you feel like learning something else tonight?" I'm like, "I want to learn everything." I was like, "Absolutely." And I did ring announcing and commentary one night, and I just followed the lead of the lead commentator, and I had a niche for it, and I decided to try and improve that craft to try and get it to the same level that I've gotten my ring announcing. And I figured it's a good way to double down on getting booked. If there's a ring announcer somewhere, then I can try and get booked as a commentator, and it's been pretty successful.
First night, obviously, you're kind of thrown into the fire, but yeah. When you decided to commentary a try, were there people out there that you contacted or spoke to try to guide you as a commentator, or was it something that you sort of did on your own and figured out as you went along?
There was a gentleman that helped me out initially, and then as I started branching out to other companies, I kind of said, I always got booked as the ring announcer, and I was always like, hey, if you guys ever need a commentator as well, I can also offer my services in that department to try and make it one less thing that a promoter has to, like, worry about. A lot of promoters like the fact that I can do multiple, like, jobs on a show because I take care of all the headaches and I work self-sufficiently. So most promoters know they don't have to, like, baby me, and they can go worry about the million other things that it takes to run a successful promotion. And I really enjoy the commentating. I like to help tell the story, and it keeps me, like, in sync with the show for the full 3 hours or whatever an event goes for, and I really enjoy it.
Professional wrestling is unique in that it is sort of a blend between sports and other forms of entertainment coming together, especially in the more modern era in the last, say, 25 years or so. Do you look at what you do when you do commentary as doing a sports commentary, or do you see it as something different than what sports commentary would be?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't think of myself as a sports commentator. I've worked with commentators that come from, like, a football background, and I would do the color commentary, and they would do, like, play-by-play. And the way that a sports commentator does play-by-play, I don't think that's quite how I present my announcing. I started off as a play-by-play announcer, a commentator, and recently I've done a little bit of color commentary, and, you know, you don't realize how much you're going to enjoy something until you actually try it. And color commentary brings out more of my natural personality, and play-by-play, that's where the real hard work's at. You got to know all the movesets, and the commentator can basically add their charisma, and they can help to advance the story and tell the story, whereas the play-by-play guy focuses more on the movesets that the wrestlers are performing. So, yeah, I try and put my energy into it. You were asking me earlier about how did I advance my commentary. I learned off of one or two guys, and then I got stuck thereafter. I just watched a lot of old wrestling on, like, the network and DVDs and such. And, I mean, on some shows, I'm kind of juggling color commentary and play-by-play, doing both as one. There's been lots of times where I'm the only commentator, so you have to be able – you can't just do all play-by-play. You can't just do all color. You got to mix it up. And, that's a certain skill set that I don't think everybody has. But if you can find somebody that can on the fly do both play-by-play and color in one shot, I mean it makes you more valuable to the company. Got lost in my thoughts there, guys. But, yeah, I mean, as far as me, I like to be a sports entertainment type commentator. That way the fans are getting the move. Like, I know the movesets, but also I don't think they want a stagnant voice just calling the matches like this. I think that voice, as much as it tells the story, the energy in the voice and the visual of the fan watching the action in the ring, I think it all gels into one magical platform known as sports entertainment or pro wrestling as a whole.
Ellen, the independent wrestling scene especially, a lot of companies have moved towards using an in-house over the PA commentary. I've seen it really distract from shows, and I have seen it actually help on shows with a newer fan base. There's sort of a wide mix of results, and there seems to be a pretty diverse amount of feelings on in-house over the PA commentary. Where do you stand on that type of commentary?
Well, another great question, and the reason I say that, the very first time I did commentary, the company I worked for, one of the first companies I worked for, Devastation Wrestling Federation out of Pensauken, I don't think they're having active shows anymore. That was their format. They did over the PA commentary. So that was the first environment that I was introduced to being in the business on live shows. And it had its pros and cons. I think there was a mixed reaction. Some fans were like, hey, shut up. Or some fans, I had some fans say, after I started getting my niche for it at that place, a lot of people would purposely try and format where they sat closest to the commentary table because they said that me and my broadcast colleague told a great story. And not only did they want to hear it over the PA, but they wanted to be able to hear it coming from our voices because they wanted to sit right in front of us. So in their ear, they'd hear our voice, and then their eyeballs are right on the platform being the wrestling ring, and they said it really enhanced their experience. Now, a couple of performers had some mixed results. Some of the wrestlers had mentioned that it was kind of distracting in the ring, but at the same time, a good heel a lot of times would play into it, and they'd be like, shut up, David Adams! Like, you know, they could start like jawing at the commentator, and that would get a good reaction from the crowd. And of course, I'm going to react like, I'm just doing my job, sir, I'm sorry. So, I mean, I think it's a matter of your personal preference. As I've gotten more established, I mean, I'll work whatever system a promoter wants. If I'm going there and I'm getting paid for services rendered, it's whatever they want. If I have a preference, I personally try and stay away from the PA system. I like doing it right into a recording device and whatever they want to do with it from there. And that way, only the people that are around me can hear me, and generally my voice will get drowned out. The crowd should be cheering or booing, and you shouldn't be able to hear me. I've been told on a number of occasions, hey, announcer, you're talking too loud because I have a natural announcer voice, but that's all right. If you're going to put yourself into a public platform, you have to be able to take the people helping you as well as the people giving you cheers. So that's all part of the business per se.
I know I have seen on independent shows where there's live commentary, a lot of times the commentators, I don't know if it's intentional or just from lack of experience, but they will tend to bury the referees. They'll talk about things behind the referee's back loudly over the PA, where a referee should know there's something going on if the person working for the company, the commentator, is saying such over the PA. Do you ever run into things like that where when doing over the PA commentary, it sometimes buries either the referee or one of the wrestlers or a manager or something of that nature, just from lack of experience or lack of knowledge how to do the commentary without taking away from the match?
You know, absolutely. You know what? It's not a perfect art form. Independent wrestling is just that, independent, which means, you know, you're not going to see everything's perfect, and mistakes can be made. And, like, if there's, like, something where a referee makes a mistake or something, in my professional opinion, I try and avoid that because I feel the fans aren't dumb. I mean, the worst thing you can do is treat the fans like they're stupid. If a referee messes up a count or, like, a finish is kind of botched, you know, it kind of stinks for the performers because then all the attention is focused on the official. Or if a manager does something and messes up, then the secondary characters on the show, all the attention is being focused on them, whereas the primary attention should always be focused on the athletes, the pro wrestling performers. So I also think it's the commentator's job. You know, if you have a format to go by, professionalism is knowing when you have to react on the fly. Sometimes not everything is going to be organized like your, you know, paper said. It's not going to, everything's going to go according to plan. You have to know how to react accordingly. And if the official's out of place or something, you have to know how to kind of just bypass that and, you know, just keep telling the story and focusing on the strength of the of the performers and try and keep those little botches within the if a secondary person has a botch or something, just there's nothing you can do to make it go away. So the live audience is going to react accordingly, but this is also being recorded for, you know, DVDs, social media, webcasts, any outlet. So let the editing department finalize that. So at least the Band-Aid can try and make a bad situation as good as possible. Because on a live event, you know, that's the beauty of going to a live show. Fans might see something that's not perfect, and then, hey, boo or cheer, you paid your hard-earned money, and we respect that. But as a performer and professionals, it's our job that, you know, the show must go on. It must keep going as smooth and fluid as possible. So, yeah, I don't want to use the word mastered, but I'm very good at keeping the story going. And if something happens, to, avoid the main focal point of that situation and make sure that the fans are still focusing on the athleticism and the magic happening in the ring. If that makes any sense.
It does, absolutely. Looking back on the history of professional wrestling, wrestling's been televised since the 1940s. There's been, I'm sure, hundreds of different commentators over the years for all of the territories, all of the promotions. There's been commentary, of course, for traditional broadcast television, cable television, and now with the explosion of streaming services, there's been several really good commentators out there. Do you ever go back and watch footage and focus on the commentary to try to either learn how they're working as a commentator and see what works for your situation, or maybe use it as a tool to try to pattern a certain style for yourself?
Absolutely. I make it a goal to never obviously copy somebody's style, but I have watched wrestling shows where I actually, I didn't watch the wrestling match per se. I would be doing something else and purposely just turn the volume up on the commentary, and I would focus on the commentary and not the wrestling. And then I've also just gone back and watched that same show with the commentary and the visual presentation of the wrestling as well. And I like to focus on how commentators don't talk over each other. It's easy with a two-person team, but I've worked with three-person teams. I've worked with four- and five-people teams. Sometimes you have, like, three commentators, and then maybe you'll have, like, a tag team join you that's doing commentary because the teams in the ring have been involved in a recent storyline. So I'm a big fan of having talent do commentary with me when it's storyline, what it's valuable to advancing a storyline. So then there's a certain art form between proper pauses. It's okay to use hand signals sometimes. And you also have to make sure, that's where it gets tricky, where you want to try and make sure that there is a play-by-play and there's just color. Usually you can rely, like if you're doing commentary and you have guest commentators like the wrestlers, that's instant color commentary right now, because then that allows the fans to see their personality. Sometimes you can't always get a personality from somebody by just watching their art form of wrestling in the ring, and maybe they don't cut that many backstage promos. This is a great way to add the talent onto the commentary that you can get a feel of the personality, because that's the trick to it. It's not just all about the movesets now. You need to have that emotional connection to the fan, whether you love them or hate them. But that the best way to do that is to observe the personality. Now, I'm just working with the commentators. Yeah, I think there's a certain pacing. Generally, the play-by-play guy, I think he's more like, as they call the a straight guy. And then he gets very excited for the, like, near falls. And then your color guy, whether he's a babyface or heel, he should always have an outgoing personality. I believe the color commentary guy should never just be blase, blah, dull. Whether you're a baby or a heel, work your personality. If usually a play-by-play commentator, they should be neutral, but most of them tend to have like a baby face personality. So in this case, it's great. Like Corey Graves in the WWE. He's the best because he can work and he can trash talk because he's a heel and he can just counter anything any of the other commentators say, and it just makes easy back and forth. Having a heel commentator is magical. A babyface color commentator is good too, but you generally tend to have a lot of agreeing with the play-by-play guy, and sometimes it's good to have that. As nice as it is to always be agreeing for 3 hours, I think it's nice to have that good versus evil. Trash talk the color guy, maybe trash talking what the play-by-play guy is saying, and then it also tests them to make sure they can stay on each other's level and they don't throw each other off. And then it's kind of like a rock band. Everybody works in perfect sync, and when you have that in addition to the great action in the ring, everything thrown together makes for one heck of a rock concert.
Looking at the landscape of television commentary, say 30 years ago, and the commentary of today, do you think that the position of the commentator is perhaps more vital now than it was 30 years ago, or do you think that the overall importance has remained the same or maybe lessened?
I think a commentator's role has always been important. I mean, today with fans expecting more and more, and it's hard to keep them satisfied in the long run. Pro wrestling, as far as episodic goes, if you're trying to tell whether you're doing a weekly episodic series, monthly episodic series, if you're running a promotion every 2-3 months, it's important to keep the fans, in tune and not get bored. And in this world where there's so much social media and there's so many quote-unquote shiny things to just, fans are like, ooh, I like this today. And then, by next week, you forget that storyline was even happening. I think it's even more vital nowadays that the commentators are on their game, because like you mentioned earlier for your introduction to the show, the commentator, they're the ones that tell the story. They're, the athletes are doing their thing, and they sometimes will cut a promo, but a good promo shouldn't be any more than like a couple minutes long. In my opinion, 60 seconds to 2 minutes is plenty. Some of the more higher ed professional levels, you have 10-minute segments, and that's fine, obviously, because that's a different level of entertainment. But it's the commentators that are always there. It's the commentators that are hosting web series. If a company only runs once a month, but they've broken up their live shows into 4 weekly, web shows, web series, you're not going to have enough content. Say your web series is 60 minutes long each week. Most shows don't have 60 minutes of content. They have maybe 25, 30 minutes of content, and that's where you have a buzz in between, and the commentators are there, and recapping is so important on any level of wrestling, sports entertainment, whatever you want to call it. You want to constantly recap things because fans can be very forgetful, and it's not because the fans are dumb. The fans are very smart, but there's so much wrestling out there that it's very important for commentators to keep rehashing an existing story. How important this story is. This story has been built up for 6 months, and it all culminates tonight. You want to remind people that these performers have been busting their ass, with these storylines for a lot. Even on the independents, I've worked with plenty of companies. 6 month storylines on the independents are amazing because, you're only doing it most companies maybe once, twice a month if you're truly blessed. So you want to make sure that the fans are getting the full impact of all the hard work that's been put in. I wish I could go back to 30 years ago. I would do commentary every show with Vince McMahon. A lot of the young people don't realize how great he was as a commentator. He's Vince McMahon, the billionaire, the founder of WWE. But if you go back to like 80s wrestling and early 90s wrestling, Vince McMahon was magical no matter who he worked with. Vince McMahon and Macho Man Randy Savage were a great team. It's a team that can get forgotten about because there's been so many like tandems over the years. But it's just people that always wanted to make sure that stuff was over the top. You can never go wrong with Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby the Brain Heenan. The Brain was always on point with everything. Gorilla was the best, like, straight man, and Bobby was there to always just crap on everything he had to say, but he also would have the story to, like, tell. So you had, like, that one, straight personality, and you had that one over-the-top personality. And then, like I said, it's just very important sometimes to have a contrast. You don't want two commentators that have the same exact personality. You want them to have contrasting personalities, because then when the product is put out there, DVDs, Blu-rays, streams, all this social media we have, then people are going to feel that contrast, and it's very important. So, yeah, I mean, to make a short story long, commentary is more important than ever, because we need to let these fans know how important everything is, because there's so much going on, and how are you going to define your company so it stands out versus everybody else, so it doesn't get lost in the shuffle, I guess.
Looking at today's television landscape, just on your standard broadcast and cable television without going into the streaming services, you have people out there like Michael Cole, Ian Riccaboni, Kevin Kelly, Corey Graves. You have Colt Cabana. There's so many good commentators out there right now. Jim Ross coming back to network television in a few months with AEW even. Who would you say is possibly the best commentator for wrestling that's on either broadcast or cable television right now?
Well, first and foremost, you said all those guys are good. And that's not even close to being correct. Those guys are all great. I aspire, if I could be even as an eighth of as good as any of those guys you just mentioned, I'd have a blessed life. I've been trying to get my commentary game improved over the years. I don't think it's as good as my ring announcing game. I mean, that's ring announcing was my first true love, and I've really been trying to put the time in to improve my craft on commentary. But right off the bat, I mean, Jim Ross, any company that has Jim Ross is going places. Jim Ross is the man, and all elite wrestling, they know they have he's the best. There's not too many more words to put it in. Jim Ross tells a great story. He's got the great voice. He's super organized. He's amazing, and he's been around the business longer than I've been alive, I'm sure. And that company, once they hit TV, it's just as soon as that voice pops up, it's like that's going to bring back maybe fans that gave up on pro wrestling. They're going to hear Jim Ross's voice, and they're automatically going to be, oh, wow, on that merit alone is amazing. Ian Riccaboni, what he's done with Ring of Honor, he's totally earned it. He's worked his way up the corporate scale, have you, up that proverbial ladder, and he is the commentator voice there, and he worked hard for it. I actually met him briefly for the first time ever a few weeks ago at a benefit in Allentown, and I'm super nice guy, a gentleman, and just the way he carries himself outside of a professional wrestling setting, and then to the setting, guy's just professional all around. Everybody else you mentioned, like we said, Michael Cole, the gem of WWE, this guy's been calling matches for well over 20 years. He's been the centerpiece of play-by-play. It was kind of like the power of the torch. You know, Jerry the King Lawler and Mr. Ross were that tag team tandem, a duo on commentary for so many years. And then Michael Cole, he was handed the lead play-by-play role. I mean, he's a machine. The guy's always prepared. He's always there for work. I don't think I have to blow smoke up Michael Cole's ass. He's the man, and obviously he's been in the WWE for forever, and that's a testament to his hard work. Corey Graves there, once again, the fact that he's working on so many different platforms with WWE now shows you how much faith they have in him. And it's always beneficial to have a former wrestler, someone that's been in the squared circle, taking the bumps, putting in the hard work. You know, he sacrificed his body until he could no longer perform. The fact that he has all that knowledge, and he's a hell of a journalist and a, and a and a color commentator, and that just means that the boys in the back have that much more respect for him as well. I think that is so advantageous to a commentary team right there, because sometimes wrestlers can only talk to commentators for so long because, you know, it's like, we haven't been there, we haven't taken the bumps. But when you have a guy like that who's been there, that's why Jerry Lawler has been so successful at it. It's kind of like a coach in the Major League Baseball. Whenever the coach was like a former like player, all the players on the team tend to have a little bit, that much more respect for him, because they can talk to him as a coach, but they can also talk to him as a colleague because he's been there and he knows what kind of sacrifices it takes to be that professional, you know, ball player, or in this case, a professional wrestler. So, I mean, things like that, the little things that fans don't think about, I mean, all that stuff adds to the rapport that the commentators can have with the talent, and that translates, you know, excellent on television, that translates in public appearances with them, when they do interviews, face-to-face interviews, stuff like that. I think that's all important pieces of the puzzle so that you have, you know, great commentating all around within a specified promotion.
In pro wrestling, things can sometimes go very wrong, be it a very serious injury, be it a problem with the ring, be it problems with the camera or the production truck, and commentators often are given the job to buy time until the problem is resolved and they continue with the show. Have you run into many instances where you were put into a situation where you had to buy time on a televised product in order for whatever problem arose to be corrected?
I've only had experience with, well, one televised product. Last month, I was blessed to do, I did a couple of tapings for Impact Wrestling where I was the ring announcer, not the commentator. And in the earpiece, they were having some technical things, and they were telling me to keep the crowd, you know, in tune. And in that case, it's very important to have, you know, like hype material. Let them know about upcoming events. Let them know about upcoming matches on the show. I mean, it doesn't even have to do with, like, Impact. I mean, that was a great experience. And going back to commentators, Josh Matthews is an amazing commentator. I don't think people give him enough credit for all the work he does with that company. I listened to him work for a whole weekend straight, and that guy's a machine. And it really reminded me of how much more I need to do to up my commentary game. But, yeah, I mean, it's not just like a televised product. With any kind of wrestling, I've been in this business 8.5 years and countless times, yeah, whether I'm doing commentary, whether I'm doing ring announcing, yeah, I mean, we need to buy time. Maybe the performers, a lot of times on an independent card, the performers aren't ready yet to have the match. Maybe they're still waiting on somebody to get to the venue. Maybe somebody's in the bathroom. I mean, anything, there's a number of things that can happen. So I always make it a point to be prepared. I pride myself on being proactive. I always make sure I bring a quote-unquote, like a cheat sheet with me. I make sure I go to whatever company I'm working for, I go to their website or I go to their Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, and I get all the information, everything from their website, everything, the Twitter handle, the Instagram, and then also, like I said, the upcoming events. Is there a website to buy merchandise? Upcoming events for purchasing tickets? Matches on that show, always have a listing of the matches on the show you're announcing and any announced matches for upcoming shows. I try and basically enough stalling material. I've on any given show, I'll have a minimum of 5 to 10 minutes of stalling material. And then from there, if I run out of material, then the best material you can have is a live crowd. Sometimes it's as simple as walking around and being, hey, in tonight's main event, who do you think's going to win? Guy A, guy B, you know, and then that'll get, you know, sides taken. Maybe some fans want this guy to win. Some guys want this fan to win. Then if you're lucky, the fans will start chanting those performers' names back and forth, you know, like, in unison, trying to counter each other. I mean, what, you know, it can be like a butterfly effect. Anything can happen from there. So I think it's always, you always have to have those, like I always have those index cards in my jacket pocket at any given time, emergency material, stuff just basically, you want to keep the fans engaged. If something happens, the worst thing you can do is have nobody talking and have a blank canvas. Nobody's in the ring, nobody's speaking. Then what happens is your crowd that was into the event, now they're on their phones, or they're getting up to go take a bathroom break, or they're going outside to take a smoke break, or they're just walking around. So then, if a promoter's like, all right, man, we're good to go, and if half your crowd is wandering around, that's not fair to the next performers that are on deck, because they're going to have to work that much harder to get this now dead crowd back into it. So if even if there's nothing happening in the ring, whether I'm in the ring or I'm around ringside, I'm always trying to keep the fans into it, make them laugh, you know, just always doing something to keep their mind focused that you're at a wrestling show and it's not time to go on your phone and, you know, doll around on social media like that.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by, and I'm sure he has questions as well. So, QT, go right ahead.
Well, thank you, QT. Hello, David.
How's it going?
Oh, it's great. Thank you for having me.
I'm doing pretty well. Dave, my first question is, have you ever done any commentary for MMA cards in the New York area or maybe for Atlantic City Celebrity Boxing?
You know, I honestly haven't. I almost got involved with some celebrity boxing recently, but I had, unfortunately, there was a scheduling issue on my part, and I couldn't make it down to the last celebrity boxing. But no, boxing and MMA are definitely two places that I would love to expand my craft to, just situation, lack of options and scheduling situations have prevented me from, unfortunately.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, David, did you yourself turn out for wrestling in high school?
Oh, you just opened up a great story. I did wrestle in high school. I was very dedicated to high school wrestling. I wrestled 4 years of high school wrestling, and I was not that great. I was on junior varsity for most of my tenure. Senior year, my coach saw my heart and desire. I couldn't make the varsity team because the weight class I was in, you know, I don't think anybody could have made that varsity team in my weight class unless you were the absolute best, because the two guys that were in the two weight classes around me both went on to win the individual state championship. So they weren't just the best in our school or on our team. They were the best in the state. And I liked a JV. Hanging out on the wrestling team kept me out of trouble. It kept me from getting beaten up by all kinds of bullies in high school. And I stuck it out. And my senior year, I actually did get two varsity matches. I had a record of one win, one loss. The one loss came by way of what they call a technical fall. I lost 18-3. I went the full 6 minutes, so I never got – the guy ended up getting like second in the state of New Jersey at the time, and I ended up going the distance with him and got my ass kicked 18-3. My 3 points were because he let me go 3 times because I was annoying him because I wouldn't get pinned. And then my one win, I'm an open book. It's all true. And then my one victory did come at home in front of a packed house. Our wrestling team drew like 2,000 people every show for high school wrestling. Our gym was packed. Our team was like all 4 years. Our team was state champions, so there was like a powerhouse. And I actually got the win by forfeit because there was nobody in my weight class. So I went out there. I got my hand raised by forfeit, and everybody started cheering for me. I don't know if it was tongue in cheek or they were just. Or that was like my Lucas moment, Lucas. But yeah, that was like my one shining win in high school there. And my coach told me at graduation, he's like, man, I wish I had 50 kids with your heart. I just wish that you had the athletic ability of the couple of state champions here. He knew it. I didn't have the athletic ability, but I had the heart. So I mean, and I stuck with it. So yeah, I mean, and on JV, I was all right. I wouldn't say I had a winning record. I probably had a just under 500 record, but I was known to, when I did lose, I would get my ass kicked by decision. I very rarely got pinned, because to me, pinning means that's the equivalent. In high school, getting pinned is the equivalent of tapping out in pro wrestling, in my opinion. That means you truly gave up, and I never wanted to give up. Figured I might as well get the full six-minute cardio experience.
Well, I'm going to guess, based on video analysis of your pictures on Facebook, that you wrestled at 145 pounds your senior year.
Oh, man, you're a good man. I've gained a little bit of weight since then. Senior year, I wrestled at 119 pounds and 125 pounds. My freshman year, I tried to go out for varsity at 103 pounds. I only weighed 90 pounds my freshman year. Thank God, sophomore and junior year, I grew a little, man. But, yeah, I wish I was 100, 140, 145 pounds. Man, I didn't – and then I really didn't really turn – I didn't get my manly announcer body until after high school, and drinking a bunch of beer in college helped a lot as well to put that weight on. So that was good.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, David, if you could travel back in time, what show or segment would you rather have been on? Piper's Pit, Carlito's Cabana, or Precious Pauly's Flower Shop?
Oh, man. I would do any segment with Precious Paul E. That Paulie's Flower Shop sounds good right there. I don't know. It's a tough call, but, yeah, I don't think I'd ever turn down Piper's Pit. Yeah. All in all, I got to work with Rowdy Roddy Piper once on the Independence. And let me tell you, when somebody has never met you, but they shake your hand and they give you uplifting words, like, you feel like you've known this guy for 30 years. That's how nice and genuine Rowdy Roddy Piper was. So, yeah, that was, and sadly the world has lost a legend. Piper's Pit all day and all night. Absolutely.
Well, getting a positive endorsement by Roddy Piper was about the same as getting a positive endorsement by Johnny Carson. That's what I heard.
Yeah. Yeah, and I announced an episode. There was an episode of Piper's Pit on an independent show I did, and it was like literally the first like 2 years I was in the business, so I was still pretty wet behind the ears. So, I mean, you can only imagine how excited I was at that point, where I was still getting my bearings in the business, and I was still in that stage where I was, marking out, as they say, for working with this talent that you grew up watching. As you mature in the business, that tends to go away, and it just tends to be you work with people like it's an office environment. But, man, yeah, when I was a green like that, meeting Rowdy Roddy Piper and then Ted telling me how good I sounded and keep up the good work, yeah, I mean, I was beaming cheek to cheek. My face was red, and it was definitely a sense of pride. And just, sometimes you never know what a celebrity's going to be like in person. And when he was just – so nice and so welcoming to everybody around him. That's the kind of person, if you want to be famous in this business, you should aspire to be like a gentleman like Rowdy Roddy Piper was in this business, and all the time and effort that he's put, not into just wrestling in the ring, but the time that he spends I watched him after the show talking with the wrestlers too. It's nice to talk to an announcer, but it's also nice for him to take a couple of young aspiring wrestlers aside and, give them, the pros and cons of their match. That's stuff like that, and talk about the match and what they could do to improve. And I thought that was nice because he didn't have to do that kind of stuff. But, I mean, how else are you going to get better than to have somebody that's been to the top let you know what else can you do so you can possibly someday get to that level as well?
Well, you didn't want to really get a course on Roddy's bad side. He'd liable to break a coconut over your head. But
absolutely.
The only one that you wouldn't want to piss off even more would be Andre the Giant. Yes.
Oh, God. Couldn't even imagine.
Yes. All right. Well, David, are there any little kids out there that have started? a David Adams fan club for kids under 13 years old? Do you have a fan club?
You know, not to my knowledge. I mean, like an organized fan club per se, I don't think so. But I mean, there is a lot of parents that bring their children to the shows, and the parents always tell me that at home they'll catch their son or daughter trying to mimic David Adams. They'll be like trying to announce like me at home. There was a company that I used to work for named PWS, and we used to have like a weekly episodic, a series. It would be on at like, you know, Sunday mornings at like 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, like prime time type stuff, but people would record it. And I was told, and I used to be the host of that show. And I used to be told that the kids would stand up next to the TV and try and act like they were David Adams. So, I mean, that's when I hear stuff like that, it just makes me smile. And, you know, that's awesome. If you can touch somebody's life to the point where, you know, they respect your craft that much that they want to start, you know, mimicking you or impersonating you or, you know, it makes you like a role model to people. And, you know, that's one of the things I really love about the business is all the perks outside the business. I mean, if you're touching people's hearts like that, and I mean, I like to do benefits and fundraisers. If there's like an ill child or something and they're raising money for a surgery, I'm always there to help out, to do like the benefits or whatnot. Cause I mean, it's like these kids look up to us as performers and we're like their heroes and stuff, whether you're the wrestler or the referee or the ring announcer, you're part of the show. You're part of the circus, as I like to say, you know, and I like being part of the circus. I chose to run away with the circus a long time ago and I have no regrets. And anytime that, you know, fans are that loyal or they bring a sign. There was a period, it's died down, but there was a period where every show I went to, fans would bring either handwritten signs or they would print them out on a computer and it would say David Adams section. And all these fans would sit right behind the commentator's table. Going back to a point I spoke about before, I would do a closed PA. It wasn't on the PA, but I would do the commentating at ringside and the fans, this group of fans would want to, you know, they would reserve the first three rows behind me so they could hear my commentating while they're watching the show. And they brought all these signs. And I think it was like one or two fans that may have printed out a bunch of signs and gave them to all the fans around them. And they would hold up these David Adams section signs throughout the whole event. And I thought that was pretty cool. And, you know, they wanted pictures with me with the signs and stuff. So, you know, it was very humbling to realize that I've improved my craft that much that the fans – really, because the fans don't pay to see the announcers. Let me just put that out there, and I'm very well aware of that. And I think it's important that announcers should never put themselves over. It's our job to put the talent over. And over the years, I've been told that my hard work has been recognized. And as a indirect result of putting over the talent, I've gotten myself over for doing my job and being a hard worker at it. So, you know, that when the fans recognize that in this industry where the fans are so critical of so many things and they're so opinionated, which is great. I love opinionated fans because that's what it's all about. Freedom of speech. If you like it, you like it. If you hate it, you hate it. I like to know if I do something wrong, what can I do to improve myself? I think the people that truly don't succeed in this business are the ones that are afraid of failure or they get upset when somebody criticizes them. I mean, I love it when people pat me on the back. Great job, David Adams. But, I've had times where people are like, hey, man, even talent and fans are like, I didn't like what you did in this situation. And I'm like, I would take notes and I would improve it the next time around. Because sometimes, you know, you can be your own worst critic, but a lot of times you don't pick up on things that other people see. You can think that you're doing a great job, but maybe you were sucking the whole time, you know, or maybe you were making one crucial error and you didn't realize it until somebody put it in your face. And then you just have to, you know, there's no ego there. You have to swallow your pride or whatnot. You know, you have to just like say, okay. And there's no ego here. You have to just get better and listen to people. And I think those are the people that really succeed when you're really willing to take that hard look in the mirror and improve yourself. And the fans are the best telltale of that because they will never sugarcoat it. Sometimes talent in the back will sugarcoat it because they don't want to hurt your feelings. But if a fan has a problem, man, oh, man, there are fans that will tell you straight to your face that you suck. And I love it.
Have any of these young fans held up signs that made you stop in your tracks and burst out laughing? Like maybe David Adams is a member of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, and they drew a horse with his face on a Shetland pony or something like that?
Oh, man, that would be cool. I've never gotten that one. I would hold up the four fingers real quick, QT, but I did see there was a little kid with his parents, and he had a sign that said, David Adams is my best friend. I mean, I thought that was pretty cool. Not I'm here to see David Adams, but he's like my best friend. And I don't really know this person, but except at shows. And I was like, that's awesome. You know, and they want to give you a high five. I did have a couple of fans that, like, made their own homemade, like, microphones. They like to in unison do the one fall when I say this contest is set for one fall on ring announcing, of course. You know, I just think they like to be in tune with what I'm doing, and I like that because whether I'm doing ring announcing or commentary, I feel that it's always like a timing mechanism that helps to contribute to the show as a whole. And any little thing that the fans do that recognizes a secondary member of a show, that's amazing right there. Because like I said, they're not paying to see the ring announcer. They're not paying to see the referee or usually a manager. But all of those secondary characters help to enhance a show. So I think they appreciate seeing those characters on the show while they're there. But for the most part, I would say 99.9% of fans are there to see the professional wrestlers. So anytime we get recognized for what we're doing, that's a good day, and, you know, I can go home with a pat on the back knowing that, you know, I'm doing it the right way, and that's all I've ever wanted to do is live my life the right way in this business. I've gotten a taste of televised wrestling, a taste of the big leagues. I don't think I did my best. I think I left room for improvement, taking a deep, close look in the mirror. I know that if I ever got another opportunity, I know what shortcomings I did and how I could make it better next time around. So, you know, you live to see another show. I have a show over the weekend. You guys mentioned a bunch of shows on Saturday. There is a big show, SWF in Sayreville, New Jersey, at the Epic Church International. Sayreville is a great town for pro wrestling, and SWF Live, check them out on social media. Should be one heck of an event. I've been with that company for like 8 years. Good people over there. I just love pro wrestling, and I love being an announcer. And at that company, I do both ring announcing and commentary. So I'm busy all night long, even well before bell time. I do the pre-show stuff. I'm doing all the announcing, all the commentary. After the show, still plugging stuff. I always like to tell people, get home safe. You know, I like to greet people at the door, say goodnight at the end of the night. Let people have that full, welcoming fan experience.
Wow, very nice. Okay, well said. All right. Well,
thank
David, the Trickmaster incident was a seminal moment in wrestling history. The Shockmaster was supposed to be part of a babyface team along with Sting, Davey Boy Smith, and Dusty Rhodes. If you yourself put on a community play and you were talent scout and casting director, what local wrestler would you get to play the part of the Shockmaster?
Oh, man. There's only one Shockmaster. I've met him. I got a picture with him from when he did a meet and greet at one of the shows for SWF. My girlfriend and I have met him, and he's like the nicest guy. And you know what? That Shockmaster thing, he says that that's like his most popular like gimmick of all the merchandise he sells. He sells more Shockmaster stuff than anything else. So, I mean, it was at the time, it was kind of like I can't picture anybody else doing it. I don't know. You got me on that one. It was a point in time that's going to be epic forever. And you know what? It's one of those things where I don't want to remake that movie. It happened. I mean, yeah, there's nobody else I can really think of to be put into that predicament there. So you'd have to book the original Shockmaster for the local play. I'm going to stick with that answer.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Well, David, in your travels, in your many travels with wrestling, I'm sure you have met a lot of the stars of the past. My question is, have you ever had the chance to settle down at breakfast for a meal of scrambled eggs and Spam with Ron Simmons?
I have not had scrambled eggs and Spam with Ron Simmons. I have met Mr. Simmons on a number of occasions for probably two or three different promotions that I work for. He's a gentleman. The guy's great. He's so friendly with the fans. I mean, he usually shows up with like a driver or like a vendor. So he does his meet and greet session. And then when the specified time is done, I mean, a lot of times he sticks around for the whole show, or if he has a plane to catch, usually I'm not in a predicament where we're going to go out to eat afterwards. He's got places to go, catching that plane, get back to a hotel, you know, or whatever the situation is. But, yeah, I mean, he's a great guy. And, holy crap. It is on Saturday at the SWF live show at the Epic Church International in Faribault, New Jersey. One of our honored guests on Saturday, as fate would have it, is Ron Simmons. He's doing a meet and greet. So I will see Mr. Simmons tomorrow. That's awesome.
Holy smokes.
Good question. That's a good question.
All right. Well, tell Ron Simmons that the Turnbuckle Turmoil show says hello.
I will. Turnbuckle.
Right.
QT says what's up. He says that he wants to have scrambled eggs and bacon with you again real soon.
No, scrambled eggs and Spam.
Spam. Spam.
Yes.
I will let him know. That's awesome.
All right. Well, I have to go to my straight job. I will hand it back over to Sign Guy.
Sounds good. Great talking to you, sir. Have a good night.
Yes, you too.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, QT. Well, David, we got a few minutes left in the show, and I want to make sure you have ample time if you would like to say anything to the listeners, plug and promote anything and everything you have, upcoming appearances, where they can hear you, social medias, merchandise, your favorite barbershop, anything in the world, floor is all yours.
Oh, well, my favorite hairstylist is Chico. What's up, Chico in Long Island? Nobody touches my hair but Chico. He's a good guy. But like I said, tomorrow, SWF Mass Casualty Incident 2, Sayreville, New Jersey, Epic Church International. Special guest Ron Simmons is going to be in the house, so that's going to be pretty sweet right there. Man, oh, man, where else does my travels take me? At the end of the month, I got another show, SWF. Totowa, New Jersey. A whole summer, I also work for another big company called House of Glory Wrestling in New York. They have their big summer spectacular in August, a Friday night, August 9th. And one of the last independent appearances by none other than the Young Bucks, Matt and Nick Jackson, are going to be wrestling and doing a meet and greet at House of Glory in Queens, New York City. HOGwrestling.net for tickets and information. And they've also just crowned new tag team champions over there, the Lucha Bros. The Pentagon Jr. and Phoenix hold the tag team gold, and the Young Bucks are coming to town, so the possibilities are endless. No matches have been announced yet, but that's going to be too sweet, as the kids say. But as far as I go, I'm on Facebook, David Adams, ringannouncer.com on Facebook, or maybe it's davidadams.facebook/ringannouncer. Just look me up on there. Look for the picture of the guy with the microphone. On Twitter, the Twitter handle is Voice of the Ring. On Instagram, David_Adams_ringannouncer. And I also have a booking website. If you want to inquire about booking David Adams for your show, I do ring announcing, commentary, voiceover work, backstage interviews, whatever. David Adams here, bookings at yahoo.com. That's my little catchphrase. David Adams here, because I'm always doing something everywhere. So, yeah, there's that. And then Yeah, just come say hi to me at a show. Talk to the Turnbuckle Turmoil guys. I'm sure they'll let you know where I'm at. And, yeah, this has been awesome, guys. Do you have any more questions for me? I don't want to talk about myself. I'm not big on that. I got my plugs out there, but I like to talk about pro wrestling, not myself.
All right. Well, we're almost out of time today, so we'll wrap this up. But we would love to have you back in the future for sure. And I want to thank you very much
definitely.
For being on today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. And, yeah, anytime, guys, we can I can talk about wrestling for an hour straight, as you can clearly see. And, thank you for everybody for listening. And David Adams signing out.
All right. And David Adams might be commentating on a show near you. Go check it out if he's in your area. Go say hello. And we want to send our best wishes out to WUW America commentator Kevin Chambers. He had a situation of work precluded him from joining us today. Hopefully things are well with him. We'll work on getting him back on our schedule so we can talk to him as well. But get out there this week. Support your local independent wrestling. You can find me in Marysville, Washington tomorrow for two big shows at the Strawberry Festival. Lots of shows in the Pacific Northwest where we're located, so find one, go support it, no matter which promotion it is, and we will be back with you Sunday morning. Sunday we will have the rookie sensation, Caleb Rex, will be joining us. So make sure you're here on Sunday to hear from this great rookie on Father's Day, and we will talk to you then.